Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. Today with me we have Jesse Grossman, that is the founder of Women in Influencer Marketing. If you are enjoying our show, I wanted to invite you to subscribe on Apple Podcast and Spotify so you will not miss any new episode every single Wednesday morning. Enjoy the episode. Hey Jesse, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know that you have a lot of, you know, knowledge in the industry, so I'm quite excited to talk about, you know, from community, like how you build them, how you retain the people, how you, you know, help each other, right, in the creator economy and the struggle sometimes of, you know, our industry, right? So we're going to cover many things. But first of all, you know, who is Jesse, right? Like how, tell us a bit more about your journey so far. And what you built, you know, in the past and what you're doing right now.
Well, I'm of course, looking at your video. So I'm also based in New York because I see the awesome background behind you, but I'm in Brooklyn. And yeah, everyone has such a different entryway point into influencer marketing, right? Mine happens to be talent management. I started representing just a different type of talent. I used to represent actors in commercials. Transitioned into launching an influencer division at that agency about, I don't know, going on 10 plus years ago, and then only left to start my own management company, which was really fun. And it only ended because we sold it. And all the while, I was always just looking for people to, I don't know, I'm a big networker. I love connecting with people. I love learning and growing. I feel like a life well-lived is a life where you're always learning. You're always expanding your depth of knowledge. So when I was managing talent, I also started like a side project. It was like a passion project, really. And it was called WIM, Women in Influencer Marketing, or WIM for short. And, you know, it was like transparently, it was because I was trying to get my clients' deals at the time. And I had more questions than answers about this like super new industry that I was getting myself into. And so, you know, we've gone through so many different iterations since back in the day. That was in 2017 that we launched it. But today in 2023, when we're recording this, we're like a full-fledged membership organization with resources, a mentorship program, in-person events, virtual events, like the whole nine. WIM is now my, I'd say it takes about 75% of my time because I also do have a consultancy as well. But yeah, I'm super passionate about women in the space in particular and just influencer marketing in general.
Amazing. And we're going to go more in detail about, you know, what does it mean, right, to have memberships and, you know, members and, you know, especially also like, you know, what does it mean to be, you know, a woman in the influencer marketing arena, you know, and so on. But something that, you know, I'm also interested, networking, right? I'm also a big fan of it. I think that, it's just can give you a huge advantage on things. What I say all the time is that if you just stay home, you know, you never know what is like, you know what is going to happen. Basically, you stay home. But if you go out, you never know. You might find that person that's going to change your life. Any tips about networking? Like, let's say that someone listening got a bit shy, right? I noticed that many people are like, oh, I don't like doing networking. I get very nervous. Maybe, you know, I know that it's easier to say than to do, but any tips for people that might be like, you know what, this year I'm going to do, start networking. What would you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you my dirty little secret. As somebody who owns a networking group, I am actually incredibly uncomfortable networking. That's like literally why I started it in the first place. People just don't expect that from me, but I'm so much more introverted than extroverted, truthfully. We try to do things at our events to just make it so much more comfortable because I think that that is the norm. More people than not are less comfortable networking. Fewer people are like, I love networking. So, you know, we do things at our events that I think can translate into whatever environment you're in. You know, we always try to make, you know, we put activities out there, you know, so we give people like topics to discuss. So it's not small talk about the weather. You know, we try to encourage our members in this, like at our in-person events. We just had one here in New York, like last week, actually. So I'm thinking about what we did there. But, you know, we try to encourage people to open up and just be vulnerable to talk about things other than work, to talk about like, what are your passions? We're all very well-rounded human beings. So, you know, like I talk about how I fostered dogs for years and my dog is my foster fail, who I fostered, it was 8 other dogs prior to her, and then I couldn't let her go. So she's our foster fail. And, you know, I love talking about my passion for animals and passion for business. And I just think the more personal you can be and just connect with someone on a real human basis, A, it makes it more memorable. They're not just going to be like, oh, yeah, that other person I met who works in the influencer economy, like the creator economy. It's now, oh, no, it's that person who fosters dogs. It's that person who has that unique interest. That's more memorable than anything else. And plus, you're talking about something you're genuinely passionate about. So you'll get out of your head and hopefully just find a real connection with another person in the room. And that's just so much more pleasurable for everybody.
100%. And, you know, it doesn't mean that maybe after you like done it one time, it means that it's going to be super easy. No, it doesn't work like that. But at least it helps a bit, right? Be like, okay, I was able to do it for one time. You know, now I can at least, you know, and I do agree also when you say go personal. You know, small talks, no one remembers. No one likes them, right? So that's a good also, like, I think, good way to look into one of the first things I wanted to ask you, right? That is community. We already in the past, other episodes talk about the big difference between and the shift nowadays from going from a passive audience to an active community, right? That means, you know, like people that actually are interested, not only in listening in, but actually in contributing, helping each other and so on. So first of all, what are some of the steps in creating a community to build it? And why is it important nowadays?
It's so hugely important. I think like everyone in influencer marketing for years has been talking about engagement, right? And like that is such a key metric for people to track in order to, you know, to dictate like, was this successful for us? And community fosters that engagement, but on such a deep level. I've seen, you know, influencers, I've said this for years, the ones that I've seen be the most successful. And to me, that just means that they have, you know, they're bringing in the most money, they have the most opportunities, there's a lot of buzz around them. They're the ones who they're not creating one-way conversations where they're just talking at their audience. And it's not even a two-way conversation where it's, you know, them speaking with their audience in a converse, in a dialogue back and forth. The most successful influencers are actually creating community where their community is speaking amongst each other while the influencer is not even present. I've seen that, you know, in like Facebook groups. I've seen that, you know, at like in-person sort of meet and greets where, you know, people are just like, oh my God, you listened to that, you know, that YouTube video as well, or that podcast too. Like, what do you think about it? Like, how does it resonate with your life? And that is what I've really seen a lot of traction take off. And I feel like influencers I've observed do that. And also some brands have done a really great job of doing that as well. Like from our perspective, we're sort of this in-between thing. Like I think that a lot of people are intrigued by like my sort of entrepreneurial journey and my background personally, but also I am also separate from WIM. And I think that the beauty of WIM is that it's so far beyond me, that it's just women connecting, you know, and we have sub communities, you know, because we have, you know, managers who have their own dialogues and their own, you know, conversations. We have people who work for brands, we have people who work for, you know, brand facing agencies. So I just, you know, how do you do it? The real answer is that it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of testing and learning, because the tricky part about running a community, no matter if you're an influencer, a brand, what have you, is you have to constantly have your finger on the pulse of what the community needs and wants from you. And that never stays stagnant. It's always shifting and evolving. So testing and learning and time, that's my best advice.
Sometimes these communities, they don't have necessarily the influencer themselves involved, or even the brand sometimes. And I was listening to another podcast and it was said that when they did an event, like with the other podcast people, they did an event and there was a big community right behind that. Many people were going, of course, there for the, you know, host of the podcast, but also to meet each other in the community they never met, like, you know, all online. And it's like, you know, hey, I'm part of these. You're also part of these. We have the same interests. Why don't we meet right at these, you know, whatever podcast event it was that. So very interesting, right? As you said, like many times, it's not just about the guru, the person, the influencer, you know. It's about knowing that we are in the same circle of interests of people networking, and sometimes you want just to meet with others.
You know, identity is a really strong thing, and I see that tied very much into this. I saw some like documentary on like on Tesla owners and people who own a Tesla are like, I own a Tesla, and that's very much ingrained in my identity. I consider myself like, I love Teslas, I love, you know, like electrical cars or whatever. But, you know, whatever that thing is, whether it's Teslas or Diet Coke, like being part of that community, BMW is another one that does a really good job of that. I'm a BMW owner, and like I resonate so easily with other people who own a BMW. It's just like, it's part of your identity. And it's nice to have, you know, something that you resonate so strongly with and you're proud of as part of your identity. It's fun too. So I think there's that identity element of it as well.
Hello. Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here to do just that. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth, from influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements to managing shipping and logistics. We have it all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to DTC brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success, transforming impressions into actionable conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just search the Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
I feel it's a human, you know, just normal behavior, right? They wanted to be part of something that is bigger than just ourselves. So it makes sense on these. And so instead, which are the challenges when you build a community? I guess there are plenty, but the one that comes to your mind, like maybe two top three, let's say like that.
The constantly needing to have your finger on the pulse of what people want from the community and need from the community. Like that's a challenge, you know, because it is just a constantly evolving thing. So how do you even get that information? You know, it takes like, I'm obsessed with like automations and being like really efficient with, you know, creating processes for my businesses. So, you know, we have interesting ways of getting that information. But I think that you want to make sure that that information is accurate, that you've spoken to enough people that maybe like one outlier who's maybe the loudest voice in the room, maybe they don't reflect everybody else. So you want to make sure that you're responding to, you know, either the majority or very specifically a group of people that you're making that conscious choice to respond to. I think another difficulty is, you know, just maintaining that engagement. You know, it depends what the community, who makes up the community. But like our community, for example, just to be like, give you a practical example, ours are professionals. So they're and influencer marketers nonetheless, which means that they are busy. It means that they are drowning in work sometimes. And so as much as I'm like, come to our event, like, you know, have fun with us, they're like, I would love to do that, but I just got an RFP, like, and I just got, you know, this huge deal that I have to work on. And I'm sure that a lot of communities have that. It's really identifying, you know, who makes up your community and when they have the and identifying when they have the free time to be able to suck them in to all the awesomeness that you're doing.
And so you said, you know, many of these people are busy, right? They would love to go to events or do things, I don't know, but at the end of the day, you're still at 24 hours, so you cannot join and doing everything. So of course, the retention is difficult and so on. So how do you manage that? And I know it's a bit different because we're now jumping from community to membership, right? So women in influencer marketing, right? It's a membership. First of all, please tell a bit more like, what does it mean to be in a membership? What are the things that you offer, right? And also like, again, what are the type of people are, you know, joining? Are also professionals? And therefore, if they like, you know, have potentially the same problems during the day and so on, how can you make it still engaging and not like losing either the momentum when they get in? And also like, tell us a bit more, like what is the typical day in women in influencer marketing as a member?
I like to think from my member's perspective or my customer's perspective, because I don't ever want to lose sight of like whatever I would need from that perspective is what they're going to need. I just don't want to, I think that's really important. So like for me, I always want a lot of value for my time. My time is money, all of those things. So for us, like we never have like fluff events or fluff anything. Like, I'm very much about, like, you know, we have a mentorship program with like incredible women that like you might not be able to get ever, like an entire hour of time dedicated one-on-one. So we have, I think we're up to about 25 mentors that have been hand selected, whereas a VIP member of WIM, you get 3 of those sessions every single year, and we're always adding new people. It's not like a 5-minute conversation. It's a full hour one-on-one and 3 per year. So it's like, I don't want to fluff, and I don't want you to have to share your mentorship time with, you know, 20 other people, you know? So we make sure we have things like that. You know, we have like our in-person events where our members get like half off tickets, but you know, we're so strategic about how we plan like our panel discussions. Like the last one was about building in the creator economy, and I wanted to talk about things that people don't talk about enough. Like, why aren't there more women who are, you know, getting VC funding to build, you know, to build in the creator economy? And so I wanted to spotlight 3 that are doing incredible things and building on their own and hopefully inspiring other people, and also always leaving an opportunity for connection and for questions at the end and encouraging people, like, now is your moment. The you know, you're only going to get so much out of this life as if you raise your hand and lean in and make the most out of this moment. So I think it's always just like facilitating those opportunities. But, you know, we have community forums, you know, for people who are based wherever. So, you know, online, we have that. We have this mentorship program. We have events. We have so many resources. We have like contract templates. There's so many different things that you can just find on our website, of course. But truthfully, the thing that most people say the most, like the biggest value that they, I hear time and time again, get out of WIM is meeting the people that they're meeting, because these are lifelong, really powerful connections that we're just like serving on a silver platter. Like, we have aggregated all of these people who are incredible at what they do, and it's up to you to make those connections and meet them, but they're there for the taking, you know?
In the influencer marketing arena, right, compared to 10 years ago, that it was still this blurry thing, right? Nowadays, instead you have like very defined job descriptions, right? You really know, like, you have different titles and roles and different, like, you have video editors and video, like, audio engineer. Like, you have so many different pieces of the puzzle when it comes to that. So I'm pretty sure that people in your membership are looking for jobs. Others are like there to hire people. Others just to network. Is there anything else that you're seeing, noticing, that you're noticing like lately in terms of either trends or anything happening in the influencer marketing industry? And even under that, when it comes, like, you know, as another topic, specifically women in influencer marketing, is there any difference compared to a few years ago? Where are we going now?
Yeah. So it's interesting that you bring up about jobs and hiring, because we're actually in the middle of putting finishing touches on this virtual event, which we host twice a year. It's a virtual job fair. And so, you know, it's for both sides of the equation. For people who are looking to hire, we bring, like, you know, hundreds of people to the table that are really great candidates. But then, you know, unfortunately, one of the changes that I've observed in the past year is that people who held out for years during COVID and didn't have to do layoffs, like, they're finally having to do layoffs. There's just been a ton of people that, for really no fault of their own, have lost their job. I had someone literally text me about an hour ago who's been at this company for a long time. And I just wrote her back and I was like, are you as surprised about this as I am? She's just been there forever. So, you know, we're trying to do what we can to combat that as much as possible. Basically, just like connect people, whether they're hiring at this moment or, you know, they're planning to hire in the next few months. But, you know, that's sort of like on the professional side of things. I would say, like, on the creative side of things, you know, I've seen a lot of people experiment, but not enough people experiment. So, you know, Threads launched. Are any brands on there? Yeah, absolutely. Are people like hiring influencers on there? No, it's super new. And I think it's smart to take time to sort of like see what it is and if it's worth it. But if you're already hiring an influencer, for example, to do an Instagram post, like, you know, add on a thread post as well and just experiment and see. Don't make it the entire campaign, but, like, you know, add on some things. No one is experimenting with LinkedIn, which I think is such a big miss on a lot of fronts. There's just a lot more experimentation that I think can be done. I think people have gotten very stuck in their ways. Like every partnership is an Instagram post and an Instagram story, like people don't even activate on YouTube anymore, which blows my mind. So I just think people need to like get outside of the norm and get out on other platforms more, and just, it's okay to fail a little bit. Like it's okay to not have everything go swimmingly well, because every time that you do, it's a learning and it's something that you'll be able to improve on next time. But you also won't be able to find out if it's going to be a home run unless you try, you know?
It makes sense, you know, especially these days, like, you know, many agencies or marketers, they just stay on their, like, you know, yeah, they do their little things with their social media. They already know, they never innovate. And then in this industry, if you don't innovate, right, you basically die, right? So I do agree that you have to always look at what is next, be in the loop of trends, and also experiment it, right? Again, the good thing is that it really doesn't cost too much to experiment on social media compared to, let's say, TV, right? If you were telling me like, yeah, let's experiment a 30-second TV for the Super Bowl, then, well, maybe there is a few millions, you know, they might waste. But on social media, come on, you know, like you really can do things either for free or for a fraction of the cost, right, of other places. So I do agree on that. Like, are you seeing any, so Threads, it's already like losing momentum and everything. Are you seeing any other social media that it's interesting to you? So you said LinkedIn, for example, of course, a big one. We already covered that for the B2B on other episodes. Is there anything else? I mean, apart from LinkedIn, but is there anything else that you have your eyes on?
For me, it's LinkedIn and YouTube, and I talk about them all the time. Like YouTube is literally one of the first platforms that people are on, but I think that a lot of people are intimidated by YouTube for a number of different reasons. Cost, obviously, production value. It's a heavier lift to activate on YouTube. A lot of the people who are successful on YouTube have been, you know, they're priced higher. And I feel like they either price themselves out or people are just intimidated by the platform for a lot of reasons. But one thing that I just love about YouTube, and I try to just remind people, certainly not teaching people, but just reminding people of like the evergreen nature of YouTube, that like Instagram, you know, you put a post up and like it is, you know, it has a very short shelf life. But yes. One thing about YouTube is it continues to reinvigorate itself, and people will constantly find that video way after it first launched. And so, yes, it's going to be more expensive, and yes, there's more, you know, a lot more that goes into creating long form video content, but you're also getting so much more for your money. And there's different ways of integrating into YouTube, you know, like, sure, you could do like a whole dedicated video, but that's so rare, you know, and different creators. I'm a big YouTube consumer personally, so I enjoy seeing how people integrate brands into their content. And there's just so many different ways to do it. So I just wouldn't discount YouTube. And if anything, I would actually recommend that people just like, you know, dive into it and activate with some YouTube creators. They're also on Instagram, of course. They're on all the things. So there's just smarter, more efficient ways to work with creators. And I just want to remind people of that, you know?
What I also remind all the time people is that it helps for SEO. If people are looking for your brand, they can find their video. And after 5 years, if you do have an affiliate, let's say code or promo code, or whatever, in your description, still, even if it's going to be not at the peak, but maybe every day you still can sell in a passive way, let's say, even if I don't like that term, you know what I mean? It's going to be there. While, as you correctly said, you know, a TikTok video maybe can have a little bit of peak and maybe sometimes getting like back to it maybe after a month. But Instagram, yeah, like stories after 24 hours are gone, and the feed nowadays with the different algorithms, basically after one day, very difficult to go back. And the search and discovery for Instagram and TikTok, like TikTok is definitely better compared to the Instagram one, but YouTube is still the best one. I mean, at the end of the day, it's after Google, there is YouTube in terms of search engine, right? So, and now, of course, TikTok is also a big one, right? Many people are still typing like what to do in New York for a weekend, you know, and they find information there. So I like that. Let's jump for a second from, you know, like influencers to on the other side, right? Because if on one side there are the influencers and the talents, on the other side, there is talent management, right? There are so many, like, you know, smaller, medium to big talent agencies nowadays. I'm pretty sure that there might be someone listening today that is a talent manager or an agent or an owner of a company. First of all, what are some of the challenges and struggles when you own your own talent agencies these days?
This is like the community that I'm still the most like in touch with. I do coaching of managers and I've had management companies bring me on. So I'm very privy to this information. I mean, some of the biggest struggles are, you know, simply managing the talent. Sometimes it feels like you're wrangling cats and your reputation is on the line. And yet managers in many instances are expected to basically fall on the, like lay on the coals, fall on the fire. I forget the phrase, but you know what I mean? And basically take the fall when the creator's content isn't on time or they, you know, they deliver something that just did not follow the brief. And that's hard. And it's almost expected that they'll do that in lots of instances. So the unfairness and just generally just navigating relationships can get really challenging. Every creator that you represent on a roster is different. It's not like all these creators are the same. Even if they're in the same category, they're all their own unique businesses. And it can be a real challenge to, you know, to pivot so often from one to the other and feel like, you know, it's like you have 10 children and it's like, how do I give them all what they need? Yet the expectation of what a manager is like they are the jack of all trades, supposedly. That's the expectation, at least. Like they procure deals, they negotiate deals, they redline deals, they collect on deals, they manage the campaign, you know, deliverables back and forth. And then they do strategy, and then they're supposed to, you know, grow their roster, or they're supposed to, you know, manage their assistants. I mean, they're just expected to do too much. And I just broadly don't really believe that people's best and brightest is when they're being generalists. I feel like I want to see more managers in particular be expected to be specialists, because I think that that's when you can really focus, you can really perform. Because if you're doing everything at like 50%, how are you valuable in that way? Yet, again, like the expectation is just that they're supposed to do and know everything. And I just feel like it's unrealistic, you know?
And like, because of these reasons, right? How can you properly scale, like, you know, a talent agency? Because I've seen like so many agencies with like hundreds, if not thousands, sometimes of talents. I'm like, you know, like it's gonna be difficult to manage all these people at the same time. Do you have any tips there?
We did this at my agency and then it got bought. We really just created different types of roles than other agencies did. Again, like most agencies, like you're a manager and that job description is like 12 pages long. But also I want to touch on what you said, because it like definitely strikes a chord. I don't think that much of influencer marketing in general, nonetheless, management is scalable. I think that people assume that it is, and the expectation is that it is, and the goal is that it is. But influencer marketing, especially talent management, it's a relationship business. And like, I don't know about you, I've been in different businesses and I've had different lives, and all the different businesses that I've had, like if you want to create like a $1 billion company, you don't create a relationship based company. Like that's just not that's not the strategy.
What are, in your opinion, the best ways nowadays to build your personal branding, to make sure that it's going to be there, to make sure that, you know, you are saying the right things at the right time and so on? So how did you build your own, and what would you recommend for others to do the same?
For me, it's a podcast and LinkedIn. Like, sure, I have a presence on all the other platforms because these days, like, you just have to. But those are the platforms that I've gotten the most traction on. You have to find where are the people that you're looking to reach, you know? For me, it's like insane how many people follow me on LinkedIn. It's also a really interesting place for so many reasons. I feel like we can have an entire hour-long conversation just about LinkedIn. But, you know, it's literally like, it's all about business. but it is the social platform for it. So it's like the perfect place for you to be if you're sort of in this space wanting to build your personal brand.
You have to be yourself, or at least having your own online, you know, persona, whatever, to be recognizable and to be different than the others. And that's how people go viral, let's say, on LinkedIn. That's how they go viral with Twitter threads that, you know, have like, you know, a bunch of different, you know, like better retweets and so on. But yeah, usually it's not about the technical things. It's about the struggle of building a company. It is about, you know, today I had to hire and fire and this what happened, blah, 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 right? So it's really about the feeling sometimes more than the technicality. So again, let's say that similar to what we said at the beginning, some people cannot really, they are uncomfortable in networking in person. What would you recommend then when it comes to create content and try to remove the fear of, like, again, posting about yourself online? Okay, would you start with text-based and then move into images and then videos? Or what happened to, like, with you? And maybe did you know other people that struggled with the same?
I think that it's two things. The more you want to be vulnerable and you want to give your opinions. You don't want to have, like, you don't want to regurgitate what a million other people have said. You want to give your stance on it. And for me, like, sometimes I rub people the wrong way. Sometimes I have unpopular opinions and it's uncomfortable being on the internet having contrary opinions, and you're never going to please everybody. And so I've just sort of learned that, like, it's important to me. It's therapeutic for me. It's helpful for other people to, A, just be vulnerable and honest, and also to just have strong opinions. That is really what gets you traction. In terms of, like, the actual content itself, I really just feel like it's experimentation. Because I'll tell you, like, our podcast, I'll just be really real. Our podcast, we create, like, these social clips out of them and their videos. And our podcast editor is just, you know, that's, like, a company that we use. And they're like, oh, you know, video is where it's at. Like, everything's video, blah, 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 blah. Our reels never perform. Everyone talks about how reels are fantastic. Reels are the way to go. Our reels don't perform. You know what performs for us? Carousel posts, text-based carousel posts. So I just want to, like, say out loud to everybody that, like, sometimes the trends aren't what's right for your audience.
I like the takeaway, right? Not just because it's a trend or it's a social media that is working well for others or a specific format, it means that it's going to work for you, right? So, and I think that you to experiment, right? As you correctly said, up until you don't experiment different formats, you will never know, because sometimes you might have this bias and be like, yeah, I know what is going to work, videos of this format. Up until you don't give different ways for people to actually, like, you know, really, like, you know, consume your, like, you know, content, you will never know. And maybe, like, you will realize that, oh, actually, carousel with text, right, as you said, is performing better than that. Jesse, thank you so much for joining me today. Best of luck with the new things that you're, like, you know, secretly working on. So I'm very curious to see what they're going to be when they're going to be public. So please, like, you know, keep us, you know, updated on that. And yeah, just again, like, thank you for sharing all your knowledge with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This was The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory, and I'll see you next week.